The views and opinions expressed on the following program are not necessarily those of the staff and management of KLAY or those who advertise their products or services on this station.
Welcome to NOAA Your Rights, the show dedicated to helping educate you, the listener, on your legal rights and resources available. Our goal, to empower and put you in charge of your case. I'm your host, Attorney NOAA Davis, broadcasting from the studios of KLAY 1180 AM in Tacoma, Lakewood, Washington. Be sure to check out our website at www.noayourrights.com. There's two R's in there. As we post the audio for each show, as well as follow-up information on each program, you can also email me, as many of you do, at noah@noahyourrights.com. I'm happy to entertain those emails, and I try to respond as quickly as I can, and you bring up some great suggestions for future shows, so I appreciate that, and keep them coming. You can also visit clay1180.com. For more information about this show and additional programming on your conversation station. Tacoma's own clay1180.com. This is episode 35 of Know Your Rights. Today's show is focused on higher education, public schools, and the Washington State Supreme Court's case of McCleary, the McCleary decision, as it's known. In 2013, Washington public schools enrolled just over a million students in 2,700 schools across, it's actually 2,730 schools, across 322 school districts. For 2018, the present, those numbers have only increased in terms of the number of students. The Washington public school system also employs over 53,700 teachers, or about one for every 20 students. There is a need for teachers, so those of you that are out there, one theme that I want to talk about today is if you haven't considered a career in public education, you may want to start considering one because there are good benefits, potentially good pay, and obviously a very worthwhile career. So please consider a career in public education and consider visiting some of the state websites that can help you prepare for that career and understand what the requirements are. So the Washington school public school system, in addition to having one teacher for every 20 students, also had one administrator for every 369 students. That's actually not too bad. The national averages across the U.S. is one teacher for every 16 students. So we're a little bit behind the average. We do need more teachers and to reduce the ratio that we had of one for one in 20 down to at least the national average of one for every 16 students. The one administrator for every 369 students that we had, that actually beats the national average, which was one administrator for every 295 students. So we're actually ahead of the curve on that one. As a state in 2013, we spent an average of $9,672 per student, which unfortunately was the lower half nationally at 29 at spending per student. Just for illustration purposes, in 2013, our neighbor to the northeast, Montana, spent $10,625 per student and had a 14-to-1 student-to-teacher ratio. So why are we behind? Why are we behind in terms of spending per student and student-to-teacher ratio? We're going to have to ask that question of our very special guest today, which is going to be State Superintendent of Public Instruction, Chris Reichtel, who will be joining us in studio after the break. But first, before we have Chris join us, let's talk about the public issue that really brought out public education to the forefront, and that's this McCleary decision. In 2012, the Washington Supreme Court found that the state, perhaps the legislature and the governor in particular, had violated the state constitution by not fully funding K-12 education. Citing Article 9 of the state constitution, the court found the state to have violated its paramount duty to make ample provision for the education of children residing within its borders. This was a case that began back in 2007 by Stephanie McCleary, whose kids were in grade school at the time. The case continued until about just 4 months ago, so 2007 until 2018 in June of this year, when the Supreme Court finally lifted a $100,000 a day sanction. A sanction, and that sanction was against the Washington State Legislature and the state government a sanction that began with a finding of contempt in 2014 and then the $100,000 a day fine beginning in 2015, which reached, this is a little bit of an unbelievable figure, but it reached $105 million this year, and it's to be used for teacher and educator salaries and also special education. So the legislature and the state were fined $100,000 a day because they didn't prioritize public education. They failed to meet the constitutional mandate, mandate imposed by our state constitution and an order of the Supreme Court. So the court felt that the court found that the legislature and the governor did not make this the priority, did not get the funding in place that needed to be in place. And that sanction ended up doing the trick, I guess, because here we are in 2018 and the court has finally terminated this case, has finally terminated the sanctions, and has said that the legislature has fulfilled its constitutional mandate. Of course, McCleary's kids are now in college, but they went from grade school when this started to now being in college. But that lawsuit certainly got the attention of Olympia and changed the way the legislature treats public education. Governor Inslee issued a statement after the Washington Supreme Court's decision to close the case, saying that this is a quote, more or less, saying, "We know that our children need more than just a basic education. This is not the end of our efforts to ensure schools are able to provide students everything that they need to survive, to succeed and thrive." So what was the problem? You know, what was the issue behind McCleary in the first place? Well, from the numbers I provided at the top of the show, for starters, we weren't hiring enough teachers and we're not paying them enough. That was the problem with funding public education. We fund a lot of other folks, and at the close of the show today, I'm going to talk about the salaries of some of the other folks in the state of Washington that we pay while we're not paying teachers. But where do we get the money? If we're going to pay the teachers higher salaries, where's that funding going to come from? Well, previously, the districts often relied on local school district levies, so the voters would pass those to increase the budgets. The Supreme Court said in its one of its McCleary decisions, and there were multiple, it said that the state could not rely solely on these levies. The state had an obligation to fulfill its constitutional mandate, its constitutional burden, its constitutional requirement to fully fund public education. Couldn't rely on the school districts to pass levies and get the local geographic area to pay for the local schools. So to try and meet that constitutional mandate, the legislature and Governor Inslee approved a new property tax plan. We're going to start seeing it. Your property taxes are going to increase. Some would say it's a very complex property tax plan. But that plan also reduces the impact of the levies or the number of levies or the amount of the levies that could be imposed locally. So the state property tax is going to go up, but the local levies, there's going to be some limitations on that. And that was, I guess, a political compromise to help the taxpayers not face both increase on the state level and then the local level, too. So while property taxes were increased statewide, what some areas of the state may see eventually is a decrease in taxes, and that's going to be more eastern Washington and some of the more agrarian areas. Our Puget Sound region is not going to see a decrease. We're going to see an increase in property taxes, and that's going to continue to be the case from year to year. So what did the teachers think of the legislature's funding plan that went into effect this year? That's what we're going to find out right after this break when we talk with our guest, Chris Reichdahl of the Superintendent of Public Instruction. You're listening to Clay, 1180 AM. This is Know Your Rights. Stay with us. Are you faced with a legal issue that you need help on? Why not try a legal plan? One of those plans is Legal Shield. You can visit www.legalshield.com and you could learn more about what a legal plan can provide for you. Starting at $24.95, Legal Shield can provide help about debt, collection letters, bankruptcy, and family law issues, and other types of legal matters. Legal Shield, making legal services affordable since 1972.
Hi, I'm Jack Box, and I'm here to beef you up.
Beefing up breakfast!
Because right now, you can get my new steak and egg breakfast burrito, loaded with prime rib steak, hash browns, and melted cheese.
Let's get jacked!
Now we're just going to start out with a few hand-to-mouth curls.
Burrito curls!
Really tasting that prime rib steak now. And one. And chew. And one. Is everybody beefing up?
Everyone's still chewing.
Sounds like a yes to me. Beef up your breakfast with my new steak and egg breakfast burrito. Only at Jack in the Box. Limited time only. Price and participation may vary.
Hi, I'm Noah from Noah Your Rights, the show that helps educate you on your legal rights and resources available to you. You know, I want to be your lawyer, but more than that, I want to help empower you. I want to help provide you the tools that you need to be successful in your case, whether you hire me or you hire someone else. I want you to check out our website, www.noahyourrights.com. See what resources are there. See how we can help you. And if there's something that's missing, email me at noah@noahyourrights.com, and we'll see what we can do to add the material that you need to be successful in your case. Welcome back to Noah Your Rights, the show dedicated to helping educate you on your legal rights and resources available. Today's episode, we're talking public education in the state of Washington. Look, I know I'm not going to make a lot of teacher friends out there with some of my thoughts, and some of the teachers I speak to, they seem to get a little bit angry sometimes when we talk about salary, and I say that they have it pretty well. But when I saw teachers on strike in my neighborhood, my first thought was, good for you, teachers. I gave a little honk out, and I said, yeah, you deserve to be paid more. I want you to be paid more. You guys work hard, and you deserve to be compensated for that. But then I went back to my office, and I thought, well, geez, I guess I don't really know how much teachers make in the state of Washington or in Pierce County. So I looked it up, and I saw that in Pierce County, and there's a database, there's a couple of databases and that come out of the Washington State Office, I think, of Financial Accountability, that have the salaries of state government workers, and teachers can be derived from that website too. And I went to another website, Kitsap One, and I'll end up posting these on our site, the www.knowyourrights site. But the figures that I came up with were that teachers were being paid in Pierce County between $50,000 and $90,000, and that the starting salary was more in the $50,000 plus range. And I thought, actually, you know, that's a lot. I deal with a lot of people that work in a lot of different industries as a lawyer, you know, in my profession. And those types of ranges, $50,000 to $90,000, that's actually a really pretty decent salary. Now, again, I don't mean to bring the ire of the unions and the teachers against me, but that's a fairly reasonable range of salary. And so we're going to talk more about that and what some of the issues are with our guests in a moment. But you know, as an aside, I want to say too that people think that all lawyers are rich, and that's not necessarily the case either. There are undoubtedly thousands of lawyers across the state that are not actually getting the level of compensation that teachers are. And as an example, I looked up on this Washington State Accountability website for 2017. I counted that there were 133 attorneys at the Washington Attorney General's office that were assistant AGs that had salaries that ranged from $63,000 to $80,000, with $63,000 being an entry level salary. So look, even those attorneys are being paid less than a lot of the teachers are, with some additional compensation that they're getting through the districts with the type of salary that they have. In private practice at small firms, the number can be far less for lawyers. So the point that I want to make is there's a lot of people struggling out there. And when I hear that a 40-year-old teacher with 5 to 15 years experience is making $80,000 plus insurance, plus benefits, plus pension, and that the starting salaries are $50,000, you know, maybe I grew a little bit less sympathy, or my sympathy compass went down just a little bit. Now, I'm not saying that teaching is easy, because it's not. It's certainly a hard job and you got to be on all the time. But there's a lot of really difficult jobs out there. So this is a subject we need to explore. And that's why we're going to bring on the sort of the top of this public education triangle. And that's Superintendent of Public Instruction, Chris Reichdahl. Chris, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me.
Can we start with the McCleary decision and where your office was? Like, what process was your office involved in when the Supreme Court ended up ruling that the state was not meeting its constitutional mandate to fund public education?
Yeah, so this is a court case 5 or 6 years in the making, as most people know. It was brought by plaintiffs who made a pretty narrow case. It's, I got to say, honestly, it is overinterpreted by a million armchair lawyers around the state. But the case was actually pretty narrow. Was the state legislature fully funding the state formula of basic education? That's as simple as it was. The court ruled that they were not. My predecessor was in the seat at the time. I've been in this role for 20 months or so. Our response when I got there was obviously to try to craft a budget in partnership with the governor and legislature that met that need. And the legislature had taken some baby steps, but they really weren't on the task until the last two sessions.
Which is also why they were held in contempt. The Supreme Court felt the same way, that maybe the legislature wasn't prioritizing this as quickly as it needed to be prioritized.
Right. And the legislature acted pretty aggressively in 2017, made significant changes and candidly a lot of good changes, but a lot of disruption to districts. And then the court doubled back in before the 2018 session and said, your plan isn't good enough still. You got to speed it up by a year. So our role was to stop filing court briefs and sort of weigh in on that question. We thought the court would solve that effectively. Our message was, are these the equitable formulas? And more importantly, there is a post-McCleary world. So you solve a court case, but did you do anything to change the dynamic of underserved students? And the answer is no. So meaningful compensation to finally address market rate. You opened with educators, and we have lots of research that talks about our teacher shortage. And so relative to other professions, we can certainly make arguments about the appropriate pay of educators. I can only look at the market, and the market tells us we were sort of starving here. And our teacher prep colleges are producing 30 or 35% fewer teacher graduates than they were 5 years ago. So something about the marketplace has young people not wanting to be in the profession. So bottom line is, legislature solved that. They sped up compensation. We had a very tough fall full of bargaining. But things are going to calm down. They are calming down a bit. And now the question for my office is to the legislature, you solved the formulas that were drafted 10 years ago. Is that the system you want going forward? And how would we target future investments to really address kids who need it the most?
So if we have a shortage of teachers in the state of Washington, you know, one way to address that is higher payment, because that's going to draw in more students into the education curriculum in college. They're going to get these degrees because they want to pursue a career that's going to support them. You know, so they want something that they like, but they also want something that's going to be financially supportive. So the higher salaries hopefully is going to bring more of those kids into the fold in the college curriculum. When I look at the numbers across the country, I saw that Washington's average salary appeared to be right in the middle or maybe on the lower 25. I think that's probably changed with the increase in salaries now, and that hasn't been reflected yet in the national data. But why were we historically, like over the last 10 years or so, why have our salaries not been in the top half of the U.S.?
Yeah, those are always hard statistics because it's a function of your local economy, right? We might make on face value a lot more than somebody in Alabama and Mississippi, but then you think, okay, what's the cost of living there? On the other hand, we make a lot less in Washington State compared to California and Massachusetts, but then you look at their cost of living and you say, okay, that makes some sense. So I always try to put this in something a little more understandable, which is sort of, what is our teacher salary relative to median salaries in the state or relative to cost of living? And in that regard, we are a low state. We do think we made up a lot of ground this fall, if not got to market. Why were we so far behind? Candidly, I think our legislature struggled for many, many years to make this their priority. And while everyone wants to invest in kids and we talk about quality schools and effective outcomes, you can't really do it without actually having effective educators. And our citizens even passed initiatives to provide COLAs for our teachers so they could keep up a decade and a half ago. And those were suspended just about half the time by the legislature. So this comes down to the raw politics of choice. And our legislature, both sides of the aisle, failed to keep up over the last 15, 20 years. And we got so far behind, it's darn near a crisis. I think this fall is going to help a lot to alleviate that.
Well, one thing that maybe you had going for you with your background is you also served in the legislature in the past, right? So that probably helped you in terms of being able to understand maybe the politics at play and how bills get passed and what the funding formula is like. And do you think that that background helped you formulate a plan that the legislature and the governor could use?
I sure hope so. I think so. I was a teacher. I was a school board member. I worked in higher ed and in the legislature, so I did see it from a lot of angles. And I got to be candid with you. Most legislators don't really know how complex schools are, and most school employees don't know how complex it is to move legislation, particularly multi-billion-dollar finance change. And so I take a fair bit of criticism from both sides for not sort of being with one or the other, but my job is to kind of live in the middle and translate education needs to policymakers and translate the complexity of policymaking to local districts and make the change as we can. And I say that carefully because when you have split party rule, it's a different kind of change than when you have one party rule. So,
you know, your office is sort of in a unique position in that way, because now that I've heard you speak on some of the other news broadcasts, I've heard you repeat this message in a way that you've just repeated now, which is that you're sort of representing both sides at the table here. You, even though you're a state employee and your office is a state agency, you've been clear to the teachers and the unions that there's money that's been given to the districts and they're entitled to be compensated. And you've told the districts that money is for, in part, is for teacher salaries and an increase in those teacher salaries. And they're not restricted. Some of the districts believe that they were restricted in the how high they can go in a pay increase. And you're making clear that those restrictions didn't apply. At the same time, you also, I think, were cautious and issued a warning for the school districts, because they had conveyed that they were concerned if they did a huge raise now that they'd have to keep those raises up in future years. And so maybe you can talk about that process and some of those figures a little bit.
Yeah, going back to the 2017 session when the legislature made the first large transformation of the finance system, we were already communicating to districts, and of course their job is a fiduciary responsibility primarily. Balance your budgets in the short term, have a sustainable four-year plan. The legislature now makes my office review levies before they go to voters. There were already these sort of fiscal risk factors the legislature wanted us to be aware of, and we were communicating that to districts. At the same time, though, the new compensation, especially when they sped up $1 billion sort of quickly, we knew that would hit the districts with the pretty clear intent that needed to go to compensation. And you had this moment in history where the districts had to balance their budgets and be sustainable, where your educators said, but that money's for us. And I would honestly tell you that most districts did a really good job balancing those two interests. Some didn't have it as easy as others, though. When you do regionalization factors, in other words, when you give some districts more money because they have a higher cost of living, or you give some districts more money because you think they have more experienced teachers, or when you're cutting levies disproportionately, some of our districts are going to lose 50 or 60% of their local levy, others less. There's a rational reason a bipartisan legislature did this, but there are consequences. And so our message was, get this money to educators, be sustainable in your budget, and then partner with us to go solve problems, because not everyone had the equal opportunity.
We're going to take a short break. Stay with us. You're listening to NOAA, Your Rights on Clay 1180 AM. Lawyers can cost a lot of money. I know. I'm attorney Noah Davis from the show NOAA, Your Rights. One way that you can help address the rising cost of lawyer fees is to get a legal plan. One of those plans is Legal Shield. www.legalshield.com. Why don't you have a look at their website? The plans start at just $24.95 a month. What's that? Cost of about 7 lattes in a month? It's not a lot of money, and yet it gives you access to a lawyer and can reduce the hourly rate of those attorneys while giving you some great services. Visit LegalShield.com. You won't regret it.
America, land of blue jeans, muscle cars, bald eagles, and burgers. And while blue jeans got all skinny on us,
I can't feel my legs!
Muscle cars lost their muscle.
Where can I plug in my hybrid?
And bald eagles got balder.
Why is that eagle wearing a hat?
No way are we giving up on burgers. That's why I'm bringing back Fast Food's first ever ribeye burgers, made with 100% premium ribeye beef on a soft potato bun. Try the all-American and blue cheese and bacon ribeye burgers, only at Jack in the Box. Made with 100% ribeye cut with seasonings added. Limited time only, price and participation may vary.
Hi, I'm Noah from NOAA Your Rights, the show that helps educate you on your legal rights and resources available to you. You know, I want to be your lawyer, but more than that, I want to help empower you. I want to help provide you the tools that you need to be successful in your case, whether you hire me or you hire someone else. I want you to check out our website, www.noahyourrights.com. See what resources are there, see how we can help you, and if there's something that's missing, email me at noah@noahyourrights.com, and we'll see what we can do to add the material that you need to be successful in your case. Welcome back to NOAA, Your Rights on Clay 1180 AM. Today we're talking about public education in the state of Washington. We're here with Superintendent of Public Instruction, that's Chris Reichdahl. Chris, right before the break, you had mentioned about sort of the funding formula that the legislature ended up passing that ended ultimately in passing constitutional muster too. Can you tell us about what that new spending formula is to fund public education?
Yeah, I'll try to boil this down because, boy, there were a lot of moving parts. In the world before McCleary, districts were sent money based on the experience of their teachers. And that's the bulk of the money we get as salaries and benefits, as you can imagine. So if you had a 25-year veteran, you were sent more money than if you had a first-year teacher. But everybody had some relative sense of confidence when they were hiring staff that based on the experience level I hired, the legislature provides me with enough resource. That all went away. The legislature now sends via my office to districts a flat amount per teacher. So for most of them, that's about the average. They've got some veterans, they've got some new teachers, the average works out. For some places, though, that had a lot of veteran educators, they just got less than they needed. And in some communities that have high turnover and lots of new teachers, they just got more than their old salary average. And so that was a big change. The legislature cut local school levies, which I will tell you candidly was a completely political choice and not one directed by the court. The court said that the state had to pay for its formulas. It didn't care whether levies were high, low, or middle. It was a political choice. Once the legislature decided to rely on the state property tax to fund schools, they said, well, let's give people a tax cut by forcing local levies down, even though they were put in by vote of the people. And we think that went too far. So those are some of the big changes. There were others. There's a regionalization factor. Districts in high-cost areas get additional money. I would argue that the system is probably not more simple, even though that was their goal, but there are certain variables that are simpler.
Yeah. Well, and also, how now are the school districts going to be able to keep up these pay increases, these salary increases for teachers? And I saw that you you had given a speech. I don't remember what group it was to, but you had said that a lot of the local unions had worked out an agreement with the school districts to raise salaries between 15 and I think 33% or so approximately. And so they were they did a good job of passing on the money that they received from the state onto the teachers in terms of salary increases. But a lot of districts were like, how are we going to keep up these? Is this a one-time deal or do we have to keep stacking on top of this? Are we required to do that? So what's the outlook in terms of salary since there was such a big bump now? What's going to be the sort of the long-term outlook on increasing salaries from year to year?
The legislative plan was to invest a lot of money up front, which they did, and have that collectively bargained, which did occur. That money's permanent, so they'll get that money every year, and that's really stable. The future years are really a function of an inflation factor. The legislature put that in law, and districts can expect to get this inflation factor in the future. But really, that's effectively the plan, was to right-size compensation to market rate today, and then it's pretty much just cost of living going forward, outside of a few tweaks the legislature may make. But the goal here is that it is sustainable, and for the most part it is. It's not going to be leaps and bounds bigger in the future. It's pretty much going to be keeping up with inflation for a while.
What about, and you talked a little bit about this, the demographics across the state. I mean, we're really a diverse state in many different areas, from agrarian to urban along Puget Sound region. The cost of living is much more in Seattle and the Tacoma area than it is, for example, in Eastern Washington or Richland or something like that. Now, you said that the legislature worked out as part of its formula, and it does seem to be pretty complex. It worked out maybe a different payout depending on the region that the school district lie. How did the legislature come up with the sort of the median teacher salaries across the state? Was that something that your office did? And how different are the salaries from Spokane to Tacoma, or are they relatively similar?
Well, again, the sort of pre-McCleary post. In the pre-McCleary world, we had these differences already, but it was a function of local districts relying on their levies. And as you can imagine, very property wealthy communities from, say, Marysville to Olympia had higher levy opportunity and generally had higher salaries. Now the legislature comes along and lowers those levies, but they put that regional factor in. They said Seattle, let's just say Snohomish County, King County, Pierce County, you live in these higher cost areas. They used a housing factor, as a matter of fact, not a wage or compensation factor, but a housing index. They created themselves. We wish our office had a bigger role in that.
Right.
We would have picked real regions as opposed to one district by one district logic that was used. And so they roll this money out. Spokane area did get a little because they're more urban. There is a district or two in the Tri-Cities area that got a little. There's some down in Clark County in the Portland metro market, but really not perfect at all. I will say this. The goal was to have teachers be financially viable wherever they live. Logical. Makes sense. We get it. It had the effect, however, of sending more money to places that already had more money. And so there are people in Eastern Washington who say it's still just as unfair as it used to be because now the state is baking in an inequity. And there are folks on the west side of the state that say, well, of course, because if I have to try to afford housing in Tacoma or right. Seattle, that's a very different environment than in rural Washington. So it's funny how everyone argues equity from a different perspective. Bottom line is the court bought off on this, whether we like it or not. And our goal now is to go make some tweaks to this so it's more logical.
So it's definitely an imperfect system that needs some improvement. And what you might have is teachers migrating from district to district based on how that district is paying its teachers, right? Which is potentially a big problem.
And you had that in the old world, too. That was the challenge, but you couldn't see it as much because there were what we call these tri-days, these locally bargained days that you couldn't really see in a state contract, but it might have been as much as 30 or 60 additional days. And so we had migration before. We will still have migration now.
Because one thing that I would think that school districts want to have, and particularly, I mean, it's not just school districts, but it's schools, because the kids might be in a school district, but they're part of a school. And what those kids want is a stable environment. And if the school can have consistent teachers that are stable, that are there, that your brother, your sister had that same teacher, maybe your mom did, or you see them, those teachers consistently in your school as you grow up through the ages, that stability is important. It was to me as a kid. And if you don't have that and you have teachers constantly moving around, that instability can probably lead to other problems in the kids' lives, I would think.
It's actually very research-based. That's very true. The jury is still out on how much compensation is different. By the end of November, we're going to be able to do an analysis and tell you whether things got sort of closer together from district to district or further apart. I will say that there is a really important voice out there of people, a group of folks who would say, instead of regionally based compensation, it should have been need-based. And money disproportionately should have gone to areas of lowest performance or highest poverty or highest turnover. It should have been trying to solve an education problem
right.
instead of an adult cost of living problem. You can sure make an argument either way. Our budget proposal we're submitting drives the money into the higher need areas.
That's really interesting, and I love that because I think Tacoma schools have a unique challenge, and that can be graduation rates. It can be poverty. It can be a higher crime area. So we have unique challenges in Pierce County and particularly in Tacoma that could be addressed by bringing in really high qualified teachers. And you draw these high qualified teachers who are committed to staying with paying higher salaries, right?
It is higher salaries. It's also working conditions. So is it a place where they can grow and develop and get professional time to collaborate? Do they get the release time to focus on student data? There's a lot of questions on how we do this effectively. I will say Tacoma is a really remarkable place. And both it and the area districts have had pretty significant student achievement gains over the last 5 years. Our goal is to work with the legislature to do no harm for districts like Tacoma that have made significant progress in student outcomes. And we partner well with them, and they're a really good district to work with. I think there's a scenario where parts of Pierce County, parts of Thurston, and lots of parts of Clark County did not get treated well in this regional model. It didn't reflect the reality of cost because the factors that were used, I think, don't really address the need. So We'll partner with those areas in particular, everyone, but certainly those three counties seem to have gotten the short end of this from a regionalization and a regional cost perspective.
So with respect to Tacoma, and this came up with the teachers union, and they were on the forefront of leading the fight for this, I think, saying that Tacoma is really shorted in this formula. And so either your office or others that went to bat for the teachers in the union went back to the legislature, and they apparently gave a one-time funding for this year to help make up a shortfall for Tacoma School District. Is that correct?
Yeah, coming out of the 17 session, again, that was the first wave, we already started to see some problems. By the 2018 session, it was obvious that the legislature was picking some factors that were going to be a little problematic. Tacoma in particular made an important case. The legislature, not our office, we take no credit for this. We certainly helped bring the parts together. But the legislature made a one-time appropriation for the district. And I can't recall if it's a year or 2 years worth of money, but it's not ongoing. And so there is still some solution that we have to find out there.
The last area that I want to talk to you about is diversity among the teachers. I read a report out of the Seattle Times. It was earlier this year. It was either a May or June article in the Seattle Times that said that 90% of the teachers in the state of Washington are Caucasian. They're white. That may or may not represent the diversity of students that we have in our school, and particularly in the Tacoma School District, where we're, I believe, extremely diverse, and there's a lot of diversity along the Puget Sound region. How do we get more diverse teachers into the fold? How do we attract them? I saw that Seattle Pacific University was really reaching out to try to attract minority students into their education program. And I think they were automatically admitting minority students who had put down that that their area of focus or area of study would be education. And so they weren't adding additional burdens or tests. They were automatically accepting those because they're trying to increase the number of diverse students that are studying, trying to get a bachelor's in education.
Yeah, very complex question. Our teacher diversity has improved, but so much less than the diversity of our students. So the gap is getting wider, even though more and more educators of color are coming into the system. Most of that growth has been in Latina populations. There's actually a shrinking percentage of educators that are African American, and they're very concentrated in King County, Pierce County, and parts of Spokane County. And so even within the state, there are huge differences between our workforce and our students. The solutions are obviously compensation that's market rate, and that's a kind of a broad brush. That still doesn't get it done because the marketplace in the Puget Sound is really good right now, and everyone is now understanding the power and the effectiveness of equity strategies. So private sector's reaching out. We're competing with Boeing and Microsoft and Amazon and everybody else for this. And so compensation matters, targeted recruitment matters. Our colleges and universities at some point have to get money from the legislature to specifically grow their teacher prep programs with support and mentorship. Right now it's a, we're open if you come find us, but if you're a young African-American male who graduates here in Tacoma and you're thinking about careers, if you didn't have a good experience in education, why would you go teach in education? So it has got a lot of complexity that is not going to be solved by passively saying, salaries are better, come find us. It's got to also be, and we want you to teach, and then go aggressively find students, mentor them, and support them.
Well, thank you very much for joining us on Know Your Rights. We've been speaking with Superintendent of Public Instruction, Chris Reichdahl. Chris, I know you have a really busy schedule. I know you're off to another engagement. So thanks again for coming in studio and taking your time to join us today.
Thank you.
All right. Good luck. Thanks. You're listening to Know Your Rights on Clay, 1180 AM. We'll be right back. Hi, I'm Noah from Noah Your Rights. If you listen to my show, you know I'm a big fan of legal plans. One of those plans is Legal Shield. With a Legal Shield membership, you won't have to worry about the cost of legal help because Legal Shield membership helps you pay for the legal services you need when you need them. Why don't you visit LegalShield.com and check out the plans which start at $24.95. Legal Shield, providing access to legal services since 1972.
Hi, I'm Jack Box, and I'm here to beef you up.
Beefing up breakfast!
Because right now, you can get my new steak and egg breakfast burrito, loaded with prime rib steak, hash browns, and melted cheese.
Let's get jacked!
Now we're just going to start out with a few hand-to-mouth curls.
Burrito curls!
Really tasting that prime rib steak now. And one. And chew. And one. Is everybody beefing up?
Everyone's still chewing!
Sounds like a yes to me. Beef up your breakfast with my new steak and egg breakfast burrito. Only at Jack in the Box. Limited time only. Price and participation may vary.
Hi, I'm Noah from Noah Your Rights, the show that helps educate you on your legal rights and resources available to you. You know, I want to be your lawyer, but more than that, I want to help empower you. I want to help provide you the tools that you need to be successful in your case, whether you hire me or you hire someone else. I want you to check out our website, www.noahyourrights.com. See what resources are there, see how we can help you, and if there's something that's missing, email me at noah@noahyourrights.com, and we'll see what we can do to add the material that you need to be successful in your case.
It only takes a minute to find out if you may have prediabetes, and you can do it at doihaveprediabetes.org, but you're probably not going to, are you? Kids, work, listening to the radio, you're busy, which is great because busy people can't get prediabetes. Oh my, I read that wrong. They can. Should have worn my glasses. So visit doihaveprediabetes.org and take a short test, because prediabetes can be reversed.
Brought to you by the Ad Council and its Prediabetes Awareness Partners.
Welcome back to Noah Your Rights, a show dedicated to helping educate you on your legal rights and resources available. Today, we're talking public education and the McCleary decision from the Washington Supreme Court. For the past 10 years, the McCleary decision has weighed heavily, maybe hung over the heads of the state government and our governor, along with the requirement that the legislature fully fund public education. It's more than just a obligation. It's a constitutional mandate, and it became a Supreme Court order. It's a duty of our state government to fully fund public education. The state legislature needed to pass a budget to do just that, and they finally did recently. Just for this year and going into next year, the budget that finally funded public education after 10 plus years of litigation involving the McCleary decision and ultimately the Washington Supreme Court, dating back with the Washington Supreme Court's involvement since approximately 2010, and then the order of contempt in 2014 and 2015. So the legislature implemented a property tax formula that's going to increase taxes for all of us statewide to help fully fund public education in our state. Now, I mentioned earlier there's going to be some reduction in local levy tax so that you're not necessarily hit twice. And for those of you on fixed incomes, obviously you've got to watch the money going out because there's not a lot necessarily coming in. So the state legislature tried to cap on some of those local taxes so that you're not necessarily hit twice. But is this formula going to work? And is it going to fully fund education for the years to come? You know, we talked with the Superintendent of Public Instruction, Chris Reichdahl, and I think that the jury's out based on the answers that he provided to us today. I'm not sure if the formula that we have is going to consistently and fully fund public education for the years to come, particularly when you look at the district's a comparison of district to district based on geography or region. And I guess we're going to have to see. And this case might end up resulting in more litigation. I believe the lawyers that were involved in the McCleary decision for the plaintiffs have talked about whether or not special education funding has been met. So we could see another round in the future of litigation if there are some holes or some concerns or issues with respect to whether or not the legislature met its constitutional mandate to fully fund public education. Well, let's get to another part of what I was talking about, and that's the reason that this case came along, and that's whether or not teachers were being paid enough and whether we had enough teachers. And I want to talk about those two issues in our closing segment today. At the outset, too, I said I was a little bit surprised at how much, when I looked up the database about what teachers make, and I'll end up posting that on the NoahYourRights.com website. The one that I looked at was from the Kitsap Sun, and it'll redirect you to another website, but it has a database of teacher salaries by county and by district, so you can look up and you can actually pull up individual names and find out what teachers in your areas are making. So when I pulled up some names and looked at some different districts, I saw that teachers that had between 5 and 15 years experience had a master's degree, which ends up paying you more. On average, I think a master's might increase the compensation that you get by like $6,400. So teachers that ended up doing an online master's degree or in-course study ended up improving their salary rate, their base salary. But some of the numbers I pulled had teachers making $80,000, plus they're getting insurance benefits that were valued at approximately $9,000 to $10,000, plus they're getting pension on top of that. So I saw that as a pretty strong compensation package for teachers. And I was like, holy smokes, you know, most of the people that I work with and deal with don't make that kind of money. I mean, that is pretty, pretty good money. Well, during the break, and after listening to Superintendent Reichdahl talk about this issue, and I got the feeling that he's going to bat for teachers out there, I thought I should revisit this issue, and I did. I looked up some websites about Washington teacher salaries compared to national averages, and if we take the website's facts and data, you can see that the salaries range for the Washington Post says for Washington, approximately $54,000 on average for Washington salaries, up to Teach.com, which published a $60,000 annual salary rate. And that might have been, though, from 2014, and seems like the salaries actually declined for a few years before now increasing, going back up. The point that I want to make about the amount of money that teachers are making in Washington is this. Our teachers need to be making, at a minimum, at least in the top half of what teachers are making nationally. I mean, that's got to be without question. There's no way that the great state of Washington should be paying its teachers less than half of what the states in our union are paying teachers. So we need to be in the top half. And in fact, I think we should be in the top 33 to top 25%, the top quarter to the top third of what states are paying teachers, because that's what this state has devoted to public education. That's what the Supreme Court has said with the state's responsibility and constitutional mandate to fully fund public education. We should be giving our teachers the right rate of pay that's commensurate with the priority that we put on public education. And that to show that, I think that what we have to do, and to attract and retain quality teachers, we need to be in the top third to top quarter nationally among teacher salaries. I know that there's a difference in geography in our state and the cost of living from Eastern Washington to the Puget Sound area. I know that. I realize that. I'm just saying, on average, our salaries across the state need to be for sure in the top half in the U.S. And I think in order to satisfy the priority that we as a Washington society place on public education, we need to be in the top third to top quarter of those salaries. So for those of you listening out there, I also want to say this. While our state averages on salary, if they're $54,000 to $60,000 on average, and then you have teachers that have, I don't want to say they're gaming the system. They just, based on their years of experience and having obtained a master's, they also do some additional teaching during the year, which qualifies them for additional compensation, which runs the base package up to approximately $80,000 or so for some of them. There are a lot of possibilities, benefits, and opportunities in the education field. And I want to get that message out to those of you that are searching for a career, those of you that are considering college, in college, maybe return to college. In order to be a teacher in the state of Washington, you need a bachelor's degree. You need to teach, you need to pass a teacher's certificate. It's really complete a teacher's certificate program, and then you need to pass some testing, which is a basic skills and subject matter test. You know, there also would be a background check requirement. But the threshold to enter the teaching field is not as great as you think, and that's really important. And for those of you that are from limited financial means, talking about going to college might seem a difficult prospect. Not only do you can you qualify for financial aid, the Stafford loans and Pell grants, but there's also a TEACH grant out there. That TEACH grant will provide $4,000 a year to help offset the cost of your education, as long as in return you promise, you sign a document that says that you're going to teach in an area of need, a teaching area of need, at in a geography, so a school district that qualifies as a low income need need area, and then you stay in that position for, I believe, is at least 4 years. In addition to that, for those of you that are getting student loans, there's also, if you're in one of the high, the low income, high need areas, there are also opportunities for your student loan payments to be to go into deferment while you're teaching, and then for those loans to be forgiven. So there are a lot of incentives out there for people to enter into the education realm, particularly the K through 12 realm. So I really want to encourage those of you out there that have this potential or this opportunity or this interest to pursue it, to look at these websites. I'm going to post them on the knowyourrights.com website. I'm going to put the teach.com on there. I'll put some of the websites that talk about the salaries of Washington teachers, and that also lay out the requirements of how you become a teacher. You need to check these out. I mean, I'd really encourage you to, because this is a field that could be really worthwhile with the salaries continuing to go up, with the pension that's available and the insurance benefits. This can be a really lucrative field for you. So something that you should strongly consider. So what else do we need to do about public education? What else does the legislature need to do? Where is this going to go? You know, it's really hard to say at this point. It's hard to say, but I think that the McCleary decision has gotten the attention of our state governor, of our state legislature, and, you know, kudos to the plaintiff for bringing this case and challenging the school districts and the state and the funding formulas that were being used to say, my kids are not getting the education they deserve. There's not enough teachers. There's not enough money to pay for the programs that we are entitled to under our Constitution and that we pay for as citizens through our taxes. So the message has been made clear from the Washington Supreme Court, and the legislature got that message. So let's hope that it keeps up. And then let's do our part. Let's support schools. Let's support the teachers. Let's try to continue to increase these salaries so that we can lure more students into the education field, particularly so we can diversify that field, because we need more teachers of color. I don't mean to be negative about some of the strikes that I saw out there, but in Northeast Tacoma, for example, I saw among the teachers that were on strike, it was predominantly white. And as I talked with the superintendent, the facts that I saw for the state of Washington were that approximately 90% of our teachers are Caucasian. We need more teachers that represent the community of students that we're teaching. That means we need more diversity. We need more persons of color to step into the education realm and teach. Help us out so we can help those kids out. Please look into becoming a teacher. Check out the knowyourrights.com website. I'll post this information. And let's work together to, all of us, let's work together to fully fund public education and to make the priority, the kids' education, a priority for success. You've been listening to Know Your Rights on clay1180.com.